That is awful music. What is that? Bart, that is terrible.
The worst of the worst.
Get rid of it.
Yeah, out. Out. Get that. Hey! It's gone. The terrible music is gone. You're left with the three amigos. I'm your host of the Friday Post Game, Malcolm Fleschner. With me, of course, there he is, Steve-O, who just came from YouTube yesterday.
It's a nice sweatshirt, huh? You like it? It's got this little thing right here.
Looks like you went to YouTube U. And then, of course, Dave Kohler, who did a solo post game last week. We appreciate it. He blubbered a little bit about complaining that the people like Jimmy Dore when he was on. But you got the love. People love you, Dave.
Yeah.
You're good enough. You're smart enough. And so I'll not tolerate it.
I haven't checked the mailbox yet to see if anyone sent me gifts. But I'll check.
Wait, you said you wanted tennis and chess related.
Yeah.
What exactly? What is that? What do you want? Is it, you want people to send you a tennis racket?
A can of balls.
A can of balls.
A new board. It costs $5.
Do you ever do that thing where you play tennis and you open a new can of balls and then you use the empty can for water? Like you fill that up with water and drink out of it. People do that and have done that. I don't know if they still do. But that's it's a good way to get your essential nylon.
I played with this one older guy who must have had prostate problems, and he uses that empty can for emergencies and other. And it's just,
wait, during tennis,
he'll go behind the fence and pee in the tennis can. And
that is technically a violation of the law, no?
Oh, maybe. It's in the public park.
Urination. Yeah.
Are you exposing him? 37 years later, allegations like this come out. He's not going to get to defend himself.
I'm hated when he does, and it's distracting, and I don't know what I don't want to think about it. But so it's not me. But
you think it's a power move? If you can't beat the guy with prostate cancer, who has to pee in the middle of the. That would be humiliating. That'd be I'm never playing again. Anyway, so we're recording this on Thursday. It's a Friday post game, but pre-recorded on Thursday, and it's in the middle. Your people right now in the next studio over are commenting on Brett Kavanaugh's hearing. He's right now. You watched? Did you watch? No, you were in a meeting. So did you watch his statement?
I watched Dr. Ford's testimony. I missed all of the Kavanaugh stuff.
He had a long statement.
I'm so bummed. I'm just finding out in these 120 WhatsApp messages from my friends that he was crying the whole time and made references to Caddyshack and Fast Times at Ridgemont High.
Yeah, don't bring classic. Don't try to tear down these classic movies.
Yeah.
Did he mention Animal House? Did he mention
that list of three?
The great thing is he did
mention Animal House, Caddyshack, and Fast Times at Ridgemont High, because they wanted to. Kavanaugh said in his high school yearbook they wanted the template to model those movies in the sensibility of their high school yearbook.
Right, and so I don't know if he remembers this, but there's a scene in Animal House where one of the fraternity brothers has a underage drunken girl passed out in his room, and he does that little angel devil thing, telling him whether he should rape her or not. And so maybe there's more truth to Kavanaugh's story than he
definitely
indicates.
Truth to it. Those are the movies he modeled his high school years after.
So, all right, before we get to the day's festivities, all the activities we have planned for you, so many activities. First, I wanted to mention the image behind me comes to us. Do you have any idea where that might be? Dave, Steve,
Chicago.
An island in Indonesia area.
Indonesia area?
I'm guessing Chicago.
Chicago, Illinois. Yeah. It's Gary, Indiana. Very close. Now, that's Comoros. And Comoros, one of the Comoros Islands, which are off the southeastern coast of Africa, sort of between Mozambique and Madagascar. I only got this image because on this day in 1995, a coup occurred in Comoros. A guy named Ken Dinard, it was his fourth try at a coup of Comoros, still a failure, but that's something that happened today. But the other event that I wanted to talk about that happened today is the other image we have. Do you have that of the building? This is the ITT building in New York City, which 45 years ago today was bombed by the Weather Underground in response to ITT's involvement in the Chilean coup that overthrew Salvador Allende and murdered him and ushered in an era of military dictatorship. It was not a bombing like World Trade Center type bombing. No one was injured, and there was only moderate damage. One thing I found was amusing about the story that was written about it was that the guy, oh, Hey, it's not a Friday postgame if Dave's phone doesn't go off, huh?
Somebody's phone doesn't go off.
Somebody.
My phone has never gone off.
No, Steve's too busy playing games on his phone.
Yes.
the person who called and took responsibility to the police and the story at the time, he said, that it was the retaliation against ITT. And the story says, however, the rest of his words were unintelligible. So that's in the news story. The guy who says calls in to claim responsibility was unintelligible. But the explosions came 2.5 weeks after the death in a military coup of Marxist President Salvador Allende in Chile. His government had taken over operation of ITT's telephone system there. And in February, the previous February, ITT's chairman he admitted to a Senate committee that his company had spent $1 million to try to defeat Allende's rise to power. And so back then, back in 1973, people actually admitted to things in front of the Senate. The idea of an American, homegrown terrorist organization like the Weather Underground bombing this building in New York City. I had never heard this happened. I found it amazing that there was this kind of response. And then the Chilean government then later on went on to stage they detonated a bomb, a car bomb in Washington, D.C., killing Rene Moffitt and Letelier, who were expats, whatever, it doesn't matter. But it's an interesting story, the story of Chile and devastating and awful, and the U.S. involvement in ITT is a central part of it. I had not known that the people had bombed their building in response. So that's your day in history. Is there any other thoughts you have on the Kavanaugh hearings or situation that we're facing? I mean, when people watch this, the Senate Judiciary Committee, if they have a vote tomorrow morning, as we report, it'll already be over. So whatever we say may be dated or what have you, but here in the midst of it, do you have any reflections
first of
on
all,
it?
That committee will definitely approve him, but it's not over. You could lose some Republicans, the Collins, Murkowski's types, in the full Senate.
Right, but presumably if they're going to lose Collins and Murkowski, they will let McConnell know, and Grassley will know, and so they just wouldn't hold the vote.
He'll get through, right? If the only way he doesn't get through is if he withdraws, and he'll withdraw if he finds out he doesn't have the votes. But if they go forward with the voting, he's gonna get through.
Unless
someone shocks the world, right?
Well, yeah, but that's
Collins or Murkowski. By the way, I just want to point out that yes, Collins and Murkowski should vote no, and if they don't vote no, they're horrible human beings who betray their purported sense of duty towards the rights of women across the country. But I would argue that it is not always on women to look out for other women, that men also have a duty
to look out for women. Yes.
Yeah, so
that's sort of part of what this, the whole story here.
Yeah, so if all the Republicans go with Kavanaugh, they will take the most heat. But I would argue that the men should also take as much heat. That said, I want to get predictions right now from you guys.
Mm. Well, I want to say that I talked to Ryan Grimm on Reporting In, which is a show I do on the network. You're probably unfamiliar with it. Nobody watched it. But we talked about some of the ramifications and gamed out the only scenario he and I could figure out where there would be a vote where he would a full Senate vote and he wouldn't, he would lose is if Donald Trump has to pull the nomination. If Kavanaugh doesn't withdraw himself, Donald Trump has to withdraw the nomination. And so if McConnell says to Trump, look, we don't have the votes, Murkowski and Collins are out, and Trump says, screw that, I want the vote anyway, then McConnell might say, all right, I never wanted this nomination in the first place. You want to have this kind of S show on your hands? Fine, we'll have a vote and you will lose and you deal with it. So that's the only scenario the two of us could figure out where there would be a full Senate vote that he would lose. And it's really unlikely. My prediction is that he is welcome to Supreme Court Justice Brett Kavanaugh.
I agree.
Yeah, I have to predict that as well. I find it hard to conceive that he would be a colleague of Ruth Bader Ginsburg, who's like a supreme public servant in her career, her track record is,
impeccable.
Impeccable.
Yeah.
And then this guy would be sitting next
to him. Well, she's already sitting next to Clarence Thomas. So I don't know about next to, but right, the same bench with.
Yeah.
The crazy thing is this. So, the folks on the right are saying this is, a witch hunt, blah, blah, blah. But the reality is that he wouldn't be hired for any job in America. He wouldn't certainly wouldn't get a promotion for any job in America under these allegations. It's not a single person. It's now up to three women. And, you know, in addition to their direct allegations, there's a lot of evidence about his, you know, hard partying ways and drunkenness and all of this. So I'm not suggesting that if you drank in high school or in college, you should never get a job or never get a promotion. And even if he had committed the actions that Ford has said that he has committed, doesn't mean you can never get a job. It just means you can't get a lifetime appointment at the Supreme Court. That's all it means, right? Mm-hmm. Like if I ran a 7-Eleven store, like if I ran my parents' store this day, and he said, and these allegations were brought forth, and he's denying it, I tend to believe that woman, I wouldn't hire him. But if he said, you know what, I did it, I'm so ashamed, I wish I hadn't done that, I'm a changed man now, yeah, then I would hire him,
sure,
right, to run a 7-Eleven store, but not to the Supreme Court. You see what I'm saying? Like, there's a huge difference. There's no entitlement to get to the Supreme Court. And the burden is not on Dr. Ford or anyone to prove beyond a reasonable doubt that he should not be promoted. That's a standard to incarcerate someone and take away their liberty. It's a totally different standard. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I hear things like innocent until proven guilty. No.
Yeah, due process.
Yeah, we're not looking for innocence. We're not looking for guilt. We're not putting him in jail. We're just looking at the totality of circumstances to determine whether this person should be part of this incredibly exclusive club of nine people who get to interpret our Constitution for the next 10, 20, 30, 40 years.
Well, the irony being that, yeah, his argument, sort of the defense, is that he is already part of an elite club and they shouldn't be judged. So he wants to join an elite club of judges.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I think that the standard, if he's saying in his opening statement, he said, you can't just have this allegation come up and drag him in, you know, without due process and you're just going to believe her. And he's saying, but what he's suggesting is we should believe him. And so everybody involved in this should want a full investigation, an FBI investigation. They should want it. The Republicans should want it because Kavanaugh should want it because otherwise he is tainted. Without a full assessment of what goes on, even if he's on the Supreme Court, he is tainted forever. And if he is truly innocent of this, then he should want all these people to, you know, he's talking about all these character references, all these people who are willing to testify on his behalf. Let's hear him, okay? And let's find out if she is just making this up and the other people are just making this up. And the Democrats should also want that because they shouldn't want to reject a nominee just because there are allegations also. They should want to get at the truth. And because in the future, when the Republicans do this to them, they should want a full investigation themselves. So, but of course, that's not, you know, the Republicans are going to, if they were to pull what Republicans are pulling now, of course, you know, all hell would break loose.
And you know, for me, what speaks volumes, it's the litany of absurd defenses that have been proffered, right? 65 women said, I did not rape them. So what? Bill Cosby can get 65 women who testified they were not raped by Bill Cosby.
Yeah.
He may not actually be able to do that.
The most prolific rapists in history haven't raped every single human being that they know, right? They've not raped at least 65 people, right? Each one. So that to me is just complete nonsense. The whole mistaken identity stuff is super weird.
Yeah.
Right? And then his weird, bizarre claim that he was a virgin, therefore could not have done this. What? I don't even get it.
Like, he might as well say he's a Pisces, so he couldn't have done it.
I want to know what people think about Dianne Feinstein. Did she finally do what Cenk has always wanted Democrats to do, play a really dirty, underhanded trick, even at the expense of Dr. Ford, by holding that letter to the right time, leaking it slowly, and then revealing it?
That implies that Dianne Feinstein is all like a hard-nosed Democratic stalwart act. You know,
that's what it would imply if she.
But there's no indication that she has ever been that way.
Indication of it ever. That's why I'm saying.
No, I, in fact, I would.
I have a lot of people who will testify that she, Dianne Feinstein, is not that person. Yeah. So, 65 men and women. I've got 99 men and women in the Senate.
Yeah. No, I think a lot of things happen here. It's definitely Dr. Ford who's, you know, at the forefront of all of this. And sure, Dianne Feinstein and the Democrats might get some credit around that event. But I think without the second woman, Ramirez, and now third woman, and Avenatti out there in public stirring the pot, that this just might have been just kind of rammed through.
But they wouldn't, second woman and third woman wouldn't have said anything if first woman hadn't been publicly
revealed. But the first one being leaked, I think that would have been wasted, and Feinstein and the Democrats might have exposed Dr. Ford for nothing. Because she gets all the downside of that hate from the right and, invasion of privacy and death threats and all of that. But she's part of this terrible process. Well, it still might work out that way, right?
Yeah.
She still might just get, rammed through and Kavanaugh gets confirmed anyway, right? Which would be a disaster.
Yeah.
Well, it's a likely disaster as far as you know. And you think we were all in agreement that it's probably going to happen, or are you saying no? You're saying this.
I get swayed too.
I have to say, I changed my mind 18 times.
Ford's testimony, I said, he's done. How could you anyone see this and vote for him? But Kavanaugh's denial is so firm that I'm thinking, okay, they're gonna go with his denial and not confirm him.
They really, really want him.
Yeah.
So.
But that's the other part that I don't get. Why? Well, he's the only right-wing crazy judge in the world? No, there's like 50 more. So why don't the Republicans pull him and put someone else in?
Well, maybe that could be Trump,
right?
Because Trump wants somebody who on the court who, when Trump comes in front of him, will.
Right.
So Trump knows.
That's a great point.
Because ultimately it is Trump's nomination. It's talking about the Senate. And
it's the guy who says that a president cannot be indicted.
Yeah. Right? So that's a real, that's worth dozens of rapes for Donald Trump, I would say, probably. So he's got at least nine to go. The thing that most people are unaware of is that the world outside of Washington, D.C., outside the United States, keeps spinning, even while we are consumed by the crazy. I mean, can you imagine? The president was all set to fire the assistant attorney general and had planned it for today. And yes, it's been delayed, but that news was just, page A26 at the, C next, section B35 for the rest of the story. I mean, buried. Yeah. That's colossal. And also, 2 weeks ago, the president's own cabinet was revealed we're considering 25th Amendment solution to oust him from office, and it's as if it never happened.
Yeah.
It's a remarkable, we're living in remarkable times. It's unbelievable. But my point is that around the world, there's other news that keeps going on, but we're not hearing of it. And that's why we have a segment I like to call Weekly World News. Weekly World News. I don't say it's called that. I say I like to call it that. Other people, they have their own names for it, but I call it Weekly World News. So the way the game is played, I come up with 5 stories from around the globe, and I put them in the form of a multiple choice quiz for Dave and Steve. This is for new members. Most of you who have been here forever, you know how this game is played. But for new members who haven't seen it, but the great thing for you guys is that they play on behalf of actual TYT members, and they're each going to pick a name out of the hat of whom they're playing for. That person, what do they win, Dave?
The opportunity to request a free T-shirt from TYT.
That's
shop
correct.
TYT.com.
And we may or may not fulfill that request, depending on how difficult it is. If you live internationally, probably not.
Comoros,
if you live down the street, yes.
Forget it.
Damon pun.
Damon pun. All right, show it to the camera. Can we see it? Everyone get it? All right, there we go. I would come to Edwin to see if it says Damon Pung. Can you see that?
We can improve this.
Yeah, we could. There's something we could do better. This is what we do when we have time to plan. All right, so that's Damon Pung. Steve's playing for Damon Pung. And Dave, who's Dave playing for?
I'll just hand it right.
Why,
to
it's none other than Squanege.
Is that a character from SpongeBob SquarePants?
I don't know. It's quite, we should find out. We should make these people like text us or put in them, explain their names. That should be the cost to you. If you want your T-shirt.
I'm thinking this person has something to do with puns.
But that would be like demon pun, because AE is technically supposed to be pronounced just as E.
Demon.
Like archaeology or algae, So it should be demon pun. And I don't know how this person pronounces it, but it should be. Anyway, so the first question comes to us from where? I've forgotten myself. So, Argentina, of course. Okay. So let's go to Argentina and find out what our question is for the panel. Faced with a looming economic crisis, the Argentine government recently responded by doing what? Was it A, detailing plans to open up vast tracts of as yet undeveloped federal land to fracking. B, passing a budget featuring a 40% reduction in military and drug interdiction spending. C, asking for and receiving an extra $7 billion in loans from the International Monetary Fund. Or D, announcing that as a side hustle, the entire nation would be made available on Airbnb. Different music.
It's all right. Argentina's national anthem.
Careful, they might sue us. They need the money. All right, so we have an answer of A from Steve and C from Dave. And what is the, so we come back to all the answers, and then the correct answer is C, asking for and receiving an extra $7 billion in loans from the IMF.
What do you mean extra $7 billion?
So they had already, well, why don't you, I like how you guess it.
No, I know. Today it was announced they got $57 billion from the IMF.
So Dave actually knew that one.
It's an Argentina story.
That is bullshit. You're not supposed to know anything.
Yeah, that is, here on the Weekly World News, if you find out, if you research any international news or find out what's going on international before you play the game, that's considered cheating.
I didn't research it.
We want you to be as ignorant as possible and just randomly guess, right? We don't want you to have any prior
You're an American. You're not supposed to know anything about international news, Dave, especially a boring story like this. So, okay, so yes, the IMF plans to boost its 36-month financing package to $57.1 billion from the $50 billion that was announced previously. We can go to the first text graphic. Argentina's economy has contracted as the value of the Argentine peso has plunged and a drought has hurt agricultural exports. Alarmed investors have pulled money from the country, leaving the government and companies that hold debt in dollars in turmoil. So last month, President Mauricio Macri, who we have an image of, I believe, asked the IMF to accelerate its emergency package to make credit available to Argentina. In the next text graphic, as part of its agreement with the IMF, the government has said it will cut back spending, committing to a balanced budget by 2019, a year earlier than planned. Christine Lagarde, managing director of the IMF, said she is confident the package, one of the biggest in IMF history, will help restore market confidence in Argentina while still providing for the quote-unquote most vulnerable. And that is sort of the crux of the question. People in Argentina, many of whom are not happy about this plan. There have been protests and strikes, mainly because people remember what happened in the country before, when after earlier IMF bailouts and the austerity measures that were imposed on the country. And it's a financial story. They're really boring and international, and I understand it's hard to understand. I can get into how they have to allow the peso to float and all this, the Argentine peso, how it's collapsed, and there's details of the drought and so on and so forth. But technically, I don't understand them either. But what I wanted to remind people of, I mean, you can talk about the story. What do you want to say about the story? I mean, you read about it.
I'm getting my thoughts together, but
so,
keep going.
So this is not the first time that Argentina has suffered a financial crisis. And previously, there was a long, drawn-out court case or multiple court cases where vulture hedge funds had bought up cheap Argentine debt and was demanding in international courts to be paid back every penny on the dollar, where other creditors had agreed to 30 cents on the dollar. And they'd adjusted the repayment plan. And so this was in like 2010 or 11 or something like that. This hedge fund got the country, a Ghana. There was a frigate owned by Argentina that came into a port in Ghana, and it was seized by the Ghanaians, like it was repossessed, basically, on behalf of this vulture hedge fund in New York. And they said, no, it's ours now because you owe us money. And there was another international case that a frigate, after like a few months, was eventually released. They couldn't keep it and so on and so forth. But the other thing is that then President Kirchner would travel only on commercial jets, wouldn't fly on internationally on their equivalent of Air Force One, because she was afraid that it would be repossessed. It's just like, can you imagine if Air Force One, Trump, the President of the United States, flies somewhere and they're like, I'm sorry, you can go, but we're keeping the plane because you owe us money.
What do you think about that? The concept of selling your debt to someone else, or I'm sorry, buying someone else's debt and then stepping into their shoes in terms of the right of enforcement. So let's say, I borrow $10 from you, and I'm not paying you back, and you're a nice guy, so you don't want to break my legs and take it back. So, but Dave comes along, and Dave says, hey, I'll buy that right from you.
Yeah, I'll give you $2 for the $10 worth of debt. Yeah. And I'm like, at least I get $2 out of the deal.
And then Dave comes after me. He's like, I want the $10.
Dave's not the nice guy.
And he's not the nice guy. He's super harassing. He's always in my face. And then, you know, he has the power of the law and the government behind him to enforce it, right? I don't know. Like, I find it problematic somehow.
It's super scummy. And the crazy thing is that's what happens on an international basis. But the larger picture, my perspective on it anyway, is that, and it's just, goes back to the bailouts when we had the financial crisis, that when you lend somebody money, you are taking a risk. And the implication is that, look, I don't want to take that risk. If I'm going to lend somebody money, I demand that I make my money back. So with the financial crisis, all these banks made these terrible loans, mm-hmm. and the United States government had to repay them when the people the loans were issued to couldn't pay them back. No. When you engage in commerce,
that's the risk you take.
There's element of risk.
Yeah.
And you can do well, you can have returns, but you are not guaranteed returns. And so that's what they want.
I think in my scenario, I should have every right to say, you know what, Dave, I don't like you. I'm not paying you back. I don't owe you anything. I didn't write a contract with you. My contract was with this guy. And to the extent that you guys have a side deal, I don't care. I'm not paying you.
But
I'm going to pay him when I feel like I'm going to pay him. And if he wants to enforce his rights against me, that's fine. But I'm not going to pay you. And the law should stay out of it. Like that would be my perspective. And maybe they should.
But the law doesn't. The law is on Dave's side.
Right.
And so.
Yeah. which is, you know, more evidence that all the choices that we make, or rather, you know, the economic situation that we're in are the result of conscious choices that we've made as a society.
These are policies.
Yeah. Policy decisions on whose rights trump other person's rights, right?
Yeah, and it's not really up in the air about whose rights are get trumped.
It's
and who's
always the one with more money.
And any time when that there aren't, when you've got something like rent control or what have you, it is viewed as it's communism. Yeah. And it's taking any of the government being able to impose eminent domain, anything like that where it's the rights of the privileged that are encroached on. And that's the Kavanaugh situation. If a 17-year-old black kid accused of the same things, a poor black kid accused of the same things that Brett Kavanaugh's accused of, is not only not getting on the Supreme Court, that kid is probably going to jail for a long time.
Yeah.
And tried as an adult and all sorts of things. So it's a case of privilege, you're right. And Argentina, as a country in the Southern Hemisphere, they need to know their place, that when they borrow money, it's not just that, because they want to keep lending money and having it paid back, and they want to keep that, the money train coming. So anyway,
okay, but you moved on to that debt issue. The IMF is very unpopular in Argentina.
Yeah,
for good reason. Argentina is just educated enough and just developed enough that they know what people know what the IMF is,
right.
And they know the impact that it has on their lives. So this, the president and the current government is taking a huge political risk in trying to save the economy by bringing in the IMF or agreeing to their terms. And it could get very ugly politically.
Right. The part where the managing director of the IMF said that it'll help restore market confidence in Argentina while still providing for the most vulnerable. What she means is we're going to force Argentina to cut government spending, social spending. We're not going to, whatever the cuts we insist on, the austerity measures, they're not going to immiserate people to the extent that they're going to be starving in the streets. I guess that's what she means. But what she's saying is it's going to be the people who are going to pay the price for this. Are the poorest and the least, the people in Argentina who are least capable of sustaining these sorts of suffering. So so I can see why they're protesting their strikes, and it's a crappy way to run a world, but it is a financial system that benefits the few at the expense of the many.
And Argentina can't seem to escape this rut that they've been in for.
Well, but
decades.
It's a drought. If there's a drought that's affected all of South America, then that puts them back in the hole.
Yeah.
So, all right, let's go move on to next. Where are we going to next? It's the lovely country. Oh, it's not even a country. It's the West Bank. We don't do a whole lot of West Bank Israel stories on this on the Friday post game, but today we have one. And what is the question? The Israeli military is set to destroy homes and expel 10,000 Bedouins from the West Bank in order to construct what? Is it A, an airport intended for the exclusive use of Jewish settlers in the West Bank? B, a series of illegal settlements of Jewish-only residential units? C, a state-of-the-art Olympic training facility for Israeli athletes? Or D, nothing, the Israelis just enjoy demolishing homes and expelling non-Jews from the West Bank? Wait, you're playing the Palestinian national anthem this time, Bart?
No, that would be Israel's national anthem.
Okay, well, that's not going to win you any friends with the people who are sympathetic to the Palestinians, that's for sure. Because this is, because one time previously, we did a story that took place related to Israel and the West Bank, Israel, and the map I had indicated that Israel was Israel and the West Bank, and people didn't like that. Mm. They're like, that's not
Israel.
That's
why we don't do the Israel stories in this show.
All right, so we have another A and C. The correct answer, A from Steve, C from Dave, the same as last time. The correct answer is B, a series of illegal settlements of Jewish-only residential units. Sometimes it's the obvious answer.
But who put the word illegal in there?
Me. You? Me. Right,
illegal according to who?
The UN.
Okay.
According to Argentina.
Yeah, you know, the
hedge funds. It's not illegal according to
Israel.
Israel.
Yeah, but
that's why I didn't answer B.
I can editorialize in these questions. This is not they're not come up with the person coming up with them isn't constructing them from the perspective of nowhere or whatever it is.
Well, if you're ever nominated to the Supreme Court, this is coming up.
Yeah. This is the least of it. It's just these post games. My God, yeah. Keep these behind a paywall, please. All right, so the Israeli military is set to expel 10,000 Bedouin residents to make way for a series of new Jewish-only residential homes. Residential units. It's in a place called Khan al-Ahmar, and it's situated a few kilometers from Jerusalem between two major illegal Israeli settlements, Ma'al Adumim and Kfar Adumim, which the Israeli government wants to expand. And we can go to the first text graphic, which is, Israeli authorities aim to expel 10,000 Bedouin residents from the E1 zone, 15 square kilometers land within East Jerusalem, to make way for a series of new Jewish-only residential units linking Jerusalem to the illegal settlements, thereby cutting the West Bank into two. I don't know, we have an image, I'm not sure if it's kind of a tough one to see what's happening, as there's a lot of stuff going on in this. But the bottom line is that they're creating non-contiguous West Bank settlements of Palestinians, but they want all the Israeli settlements to be contiguous, and that cuts off the Palestinians from each other and makes them have to go through multiple checkpoints to get anywhere, and it's just a further indignity. But as of September 14th, the Israeli military shut down all roads leading to Khan al-Ahmar, and the Palestinians, the Bedouins, or people representing them, petitioned to reverse the demolition order, but Israel's top court affirmed Israeli authorities' statements that the village was built without permits. But the Palestinians argue, and persuasively, because this is the case, that the required building permits are never allowed. They never given them. So they build their homes without permits because they can't get permits. And then the Israelis say, you don't have permits, so we're going to knock them down. We go to the next text graphic. The villagers are members of the Bedouin Jahalin tribe that was expelled from their lands in the Nakab Negev desert by the Israeli military in the 1950s. They were displaced twice more before they settled in Khan al-Ahmar, long before the illegal settlements around it existed. Maybe they're using illegal in this story because it's Al Jazeera came to us from Al Jazeera, but it's really tough luck for these, the Palestinians. How can anybody defend what is done to the Palestinians? These people, they live there and they just have their homes destroyed for nothing because Israel is slowly. This is an image of Palestinian homes being destroyed. They life for the Palestinians in the West Bank is miserable, and it's a constant, steady stream of indignities and humiliations, not to mention sometimes getting shot and killed by the Israeli military. And to defend Israel in what they're doing with the settlements is unconscionable, and it's very upsetting.
Here in California, we've had the wildfires, and people have lost their homes, and you listen to their stories about how they felt when their homes were destroyed by the fires. It's heartbreaking, the memories that were lost, and now they have no place to go. And these are people with resources and friends and family, and it's still heartbreaking. I cannot imagine the pain and anger you would feel watching your home being destroyed by government, just like that, just like methodically.
By a foreign government.
Yeah.
Invading government, conquering government.
It's not some sort of like random, natural disaster.
Yeah.
It is machines rolling up to your house, and just methodically destroying everything that means something to you. And there's nothing he can do about it. You just have to stand there and watch it happen before your very eyes. And if you do anything, you can get shot.
And obviously, this is not going to breed good relations between the Palestinians and the Israelis, and they know that.
They know that.
They're not this.
That's, you know, a side benefit.
How can they? Why are they so angry? Why are they so angry? Why don't they want peace, Steve?
Because you know, some of these Palestinians who this happens to are going to be super angry and would lash out,
and
maybe engage in actions that are, you know, terroristic or perceived as such. And then there's more justification for knocking down more homes. I mean, it's a horrible cycle of violence. And they can always turn around and say, well, they started this and they started that. But, you know, I always put the onus on the party with more power and opportunity to achieve peace. They have the burden of doing so.
Yeah, when the Palestinians want peace, there'll be peace, sure. I believe that. That's what I hear from my right-wing Israeli supporting friends. All right, so that's what's going on in the West Bank. Now we move on to, I believe, where is next? I don't remember. India, of course. So what's going on in India? Let's find out. The Indian Supreme Court recently upheld the legality of Aadhaar. What is Aadhaar? Is it A, biometric database containing the personal information of more than a billion Indians? B, an Islamic tradition allowing a Muslim man to legally divorce his wife by stating the word divorce 3 times? C, a common rural practice whereby roadside vendors provide travelers with services ranging from ear cleaning to dental work? Or D, the practice of routinely dismissing allegations of sexual assault against prospective Supreme Court justices? Which I can see why the Supreme Court would support that one. So we got, is the database of you get them? You need to look at them again? Or are you okay? You got it?
Yes.
We have an answer of A from Steve and B from Dave. What is the correct answer? It is A, biometric database containing the personal, you gotta leave it up so I can read it. Leave it up long enough so I can read it, because we have people listening on podcasts. A biometric database containing the personal information of more than a billion Indians. That is what Aadhaar is.
They fell for the red herring question B, which I knew to be incorrect.
Oh, B was the divorce. Yeah.
That practice exists, but it's probably, obviously, it's not called Aadhaar.
It's called Talaq or something like
that. Yeah, Talaq, correct,
yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, I think that was just struck down.
Correct, I believe that's, and the other one is also legitimate. I didn't make it up. There's a practice of rural roadside people in India who provide dental services, and I think that was made illegal. But the idea of just going, pulling over the side of the road.
You know, why is that a constitutional matter?
Like, I want some tamales and
it's a dental work.
Dental work done, get my ears cleaned out. This is a false full service operator. Why they're selling tamales in India, I don't know. Get some palak paneer.
Dosas.
All right, malas dosas, yes. So the Aadhaar system is a biometric database containing the personal information of more than a billion Indians. It was a five-judge panel of India's top court that decided that the benefits of the system outweighed the risks to privacy, but they did prune back some of the larger ambitions for the scheme by laying down stringent new limits on how the information can be used. Basically, they said that private businesses cannot have access to it's like a 12-digit number that everybody has that associated all sorts of information about you. Private businesses can't get it, so banks and mobile phone companies know, but the government can use the details of your Aadhaar number to pay your taxes and to claim welfare payments. And that was the key selling point, is that about 40% of Indian social payments are lost to corruption, leakage, or middlemen, according to a 2015 study. That's amazing. I mean, 40% is a lot of welfare payments supposed to go to people and just never wind up in the hands of the people who deserve it. So. And also, there's no national security exception. The judges wouldn't allow that, so that the government could get your number and your information without a warrant. And so it was a sort of a balancing act that the court was trying to engage in here, where the privacy, people defending privacy said, no, this is terrible, the government's going to use it, companies are going to use it, it's going to get hacked. There have been examples of hacks. And the government is saying, yes, but this is going to get millions of people their welfare benefits who might not otherwise get it. So that's the back and forth. So we can go to the first text graphic. The system, which now contains biometric and other personal information for more than 1.13 billion Indians, has spawned 6 years of legal challenges and been a lightning rod for debates about privacy, data sovereignty, and digital governance in what will soon be the world's most populated country. And so this is, you know, the people who advocate see this as being a panacea and helping solve all kinds of problems about your personal information. It's all, you know, associated with a number and your fingerprint or something like that that can be tapped into very easily. But obviously, the people who object to it, they're saying no, it's going to be used for evil intent or malign intent. There have been breaches, there have been hacks, people, you know, breaking into the system, and the opponents have also objected to government policies that make the card, the Aadhaar card, mandatory to access about 139 welfare and social service schemes, including for free midday meals at schools and subsidies for rice and other staples. So they're saying, look, you shouldn't have to, you know, give your information over to get access to free meals if you're poor. But the government says it's worth it. But they say that at least 25 people have died in the past 4 years because of glitches in the system, and people couldn't get their rations. They just were cut off from rations, health care, or pension payments, including two in the past week. And so there's an Indian economist and social scientist named Ritika Kira who has documented these deaths, and she was disappointed in the result. And that people, the judges, are just taking the government's argument at face value. The last text graphic we have here says, legal challenges to Aadhaar last year led the Supreme Court, do we have it? Do we not have it? Legal challenges to Aadhaar last year led the Supreme Court to convene a bench to examine the question of whether Indians have a right to privacy. The court found in a landmark unanimous judgment that such a right existed, a decision whose ramifications included the decriminalization of homosexual sex earlier this month. So it's tied up with this larger question about the right to privacy, and then legalizing gay sex, which was a big story that people might have heard, even who are not don't keep up on international news that much. But this seems like a really interesting phenomenon. I'm inclined not to support it because it screams of Big Brother, but it does show that there is a way for technology to be brought to bear to help people and to provide services to people, but you have to figure, is it going to be abused, and is it not worth it for that reason?
Well, it's definitely going to be abused, that's for sure. It's a matter of how much abuse versus the upside of the technology.
I prefer, if you want to combat Big Brother, to punish abuses rather than just prohibit the technology.
Right, that's actually what somebody said, the baby in the bathwater. You know, don't throw out the baby with the bathwater. The technology is good, but we need stringent controls. And then, but, you know, that, you know, are you going to be able to control it? And when people do violate it, are they going to be people in power who it's going to be difficult to? That's the theme. That's the theme for today's show.
So it turns out India has problems too.
But it's also technologically this is more advanced than anything we're doing here. And India is, you know, perceived by many of us as sort of a third world country or a country that is much less developed than we are here. So it's interesting. All right, so next we go to Bulgaria, where I don't think Weekly World News has ever traveled to Bulgaria before. So that's pretty exciting. And where is Bulgaria?
Do you like my sweatshirt?
I do like your sweatshirt. This is the, you know, I wish I could, you know, turn you on and off by pressing your play button.
It was free. So just real quick, funny story about the sweatshirt. So we went to a conference yesterday, Aaron Wysocki and I, and you're allowed to take one of these. And Aaron took one, but he wanted to get one for his wife. So he went back and took a second one, right? And if you guys know Aaron Wysocki, he's like the most honest actor, right? So he was feeling this pangs of guilt, like, oh my God, what have I done, right? And he's like, should I put it back? I said, when are you left? I said, no, but I'm going to report you to Susan Wojcicki, right? The CEO of YouTube. He goes, no, seriously, should I go back? I'm like, no. I said, but they might have you on surveillance camera. And he goes, oh my God, you think? Aaron's a great guy. So I said, just don't worry about it.
Oh my God.
They're not going to miss the one extra sweatshirt.
Like, they don't care.
They don't care.
And like, if you were to go back and try to give it back to the person.
They're like, what are you doing?
Yeah, they like, go away. Yeah. You know, this is like, I mean, you buy 12 apples and you come home and you're like, you have a 13th and you're like, go back. You're like, oh, I'm sorry, I had an extra apple that I was.
Yeah.
Just, you know, I mean, when they deliver a pizza and they mess it up and you call them and you say, you messed up my pizza, they're not like, oh, we'll come by to pick it up. We're going to want that pizza back. No, they're just like, okay, we'll send another one. You keep that one, whatever. Yeah. Amazon, I think that's their policy now, is if they get their order wrong, you just keep whatever they sent you.
Yeah.
They don't want it.
It's funny the contrast between someone like Aaron Wysocki, who's so honest and law-abiding and doesn't even want to take an extra free sweatshirt from YouTube because that might be in violation of some sort of ethical code.
Yeah.
And then you have people who are like serial rapists.
You have people who will lie to to a Senate Judiciary Committee. Yeah. It's unbelievable. Yeah. Well, you know what? We could do worse than having Aaron Wysocki on the Supreme Court.
That's right.
And you don't have to be a judge. Anybody can be appointed to the Supreme
Court. He'll be a mess in the Supreme Court. He'd be so worried that he gets something wrong. Like, but what if I rule this way and then this happens? And if I rule this way, that'll happen. Ah.
You think he'd be like, well, they make a good case too. Well, but they make a good case too. You have to be fair to everybody. Yeah. You can't be fair to everybody. That's what we know about on Weekly World News. Because although you can be fair to both Demon Pun and Squanny G, if both of you tie.
That's right.
If it's a tie, you both get the opportunity to solicit a T-shirt. So let's go to Bulgaria. Where is Bulgaria? Do we know? Do we have any idea? Would you have known that was Bulgaria?
No, that's much farther south than I thought. But I should have known because there's a famous Bulgaria story involving a couple of our Turkish friends and a lawsuit to which Dave was a witness. But yes.
Wow.
Bulgaria is much closer to Turkey than I had in my mind imagined.
Yeah. All right, so what's the question coming to us from Bulgaria? A contestant on Bulgarian Celebrity Big Brother recently left the show abruptly for what reason? Was it A, he had previously been convicted of and imprisoned for sex trafficking? B, he and his identical twin were discovered to be secretly trading places on the show. C, he and a production assistant were selling illicit drugs, including OxyContin and MDMA, to other cast members. Or D, he was found doing, wait, since when does Bulgaria have celebrities? Bulgarian Celebrity Big Brother.
This is a very important question.
Well, you may have noticed I go from more serious to lighter as we progress. I like to leave you with lighter
I'm
stuff.
I'm going to pick. Either A or B. I'm going to pick randomly.
Either A or he doesn't know which it is. Dave is going with A. Steve is going with
B. That means
B.
It's C.
I don't remember which one. And the correct answer is A. He had been previously convicted of an imprisonment for sex trafficking.
No,
maybe the random pick is the best way to do it after all.
Poor Demon Pun. Sorry, Demon Pun.
It's not over.
That's it's not over.
This is number four. It's number four. So, yeah, so he's a famous Bulgarian rapper named Ivan Glavchev. And he departed the show for quote unquote personal reasons after a women's group started complaining, like, hey, we don't think a convicted sex trafficker should be on Celebrity Big Brother Bulgaria.
But he can be on the Supreme Court, though.
Yeah, he probably could. So you go to the first text graphic. The sight of a convicted human trafficker on one of Bulgaria's biggest reality TV shows has generated little media attention. That's the funny thing. At first it was like, whatever. Yet in recent days, public apathy has been punctured by complaints from viewers and campaigners across the country about the inclusion of Ivan Glavchev, a.k.a. Vanko 1, who was jailed in 2003 for using narcotics to coerce 10 women and one minor into prostitution and then trafficking them to countries across Europe. So Celebrity Big Brother is apparently a huge show in Bulgaria, millions of viewers each week, and in 2016 it was estimated that 30% of the Bulgarian viewers were following the show, which I don't know, is there a show in the United States that gets 30% of viewers, like maybe the Super Bowl maybe?
Maybe the Super Bowl.
But that's a one-time event. This is I mean, admittedly, it's Bulgaria, and who knows what else is going on in Bulgaria. I'm sure there's a thriving and active culture.
There used to be shows like that in America, I think.
Decades ago. Oh, yeah. Ozzie and Harriet or Beverly Hillbillies or whatever. I Love Lucy when she was pregnant.
Yeah, I Love Lucy was like 50%.
Yeah. But they only had three channels, so. Yeah. So he had been sentenced to 12 years in prison. We have an image of this guy. He had been sentenced to 12 years in prison in 2003, but had his sentence shortened to just 3 following controversial amendments to the penal code introduced after his conviction. Do we have his picture? Do we already bring him up, or do we not have his picture? There he is. After his conviction, which critics linked to corruption and manipulation of the judicial system. We have one more text graphic. They're kicking us out pretty soon. But Glavchev's withdrawal from the TV show comes after women's group Nasi Sama, You Are Not Alone, published an open letter criticizing the decision to invite him. Glavchev is also known for his controversial statements about women. During his stay in the Big Brother house, he told housemates, "I see nothing shameful about the woman standing lower than men." I guess that's a rough translation. So the woman quoted from this group said that this is a terrible thing, and it's upsetting that the TV show would sort of endorse him by having him on when he's a convicted sex trafficker. I mean, that's pretty bad. I don't think even that would happen in the United States. But Bulgaria is one of the primary source countries of human trafficking in the EU, according to the U.S. State Department. And Bulgaria has been criticized for not doing enough to deal with it. So it's not a funny story, but there is a Bulgarian rapper. Who knew? And they had enough celebrities in Bulgaria to come up with a panel of people a group to put them all in a house together. So
who has more celebrities, Bulgaria or Kazakhstan?
Well, Kazakhstan. People want to go to Kazakhstan so they can wear that unit. I mean, one of these days, for the like last show of the year, I want to put together all of my favorite stories from Weekly
Dave
World
and
News.
I are going to wear that for a Halloween costume.
The mankini? You should. Yeah, okay. We got one more to get to. We'll go quickly through the last one.
By the way,
we should probably.
All right, Bart, that's it. Enough.
By the way, that is the most hated thing that happens on the show, according to our members. So, members, write into Bart and complain about Bart.
Yeah, I mean, they're doing the Bart. Yeah, the Bernie wrap it up thing. One is enough. All right, so let's quickly go to the last one. Comes to us from Spain. And the question is this. The morning after a night of partying in the Canary Islands, a 26-year-old British woman went to the hospital complaining of pain in her genital area where doctors removed what from her vagina? Was it A, a 16-centimeter model of the Eiffel Tower, B, a turtle, C, a light bulb, or D, Brett Kavanaugh's 1982 day planner?
Oh, my God. What?
Tough one.
I'm going with turtle.
We got turtle
Eiffel Tower. When in Europe, do as the Europeans do.
The correct answer is B, a turtle. Steve O pulls it out, a tie. 2-2. Congratulations.
That is unbelievable.
So both Damon Punn and Squanny. So this is.
Oh, I came through for Damon Punn in the end.
Yeah, awesome. You did. Another tie. So yeah, when we went to the emergency room, and it's in the Canary Islands, a town called Tenerife. I'm not sure if it's pronounced Tenerife or Tenerife. There's debate. And they pulled out a dead Chinese pond turtle. You saw one there before.
That's gross.
And the doctor called the police, who took a statement from her. She explained that she had gone out partying the night before, but could not recall what had happened that night. That last text graphic, we have sources close to the case have told El País that the main theory is that the reptile was inserted into the woman's vagina either by herself or by someone else, given that it is impossible that it could have ended up inside her body any other way. So the turtle was deceased. We are ruling out suicide on the part of the turtle. Mm-hmm. And it's not funny because she might have been sexually assaulted, but she hasn't filed a complaint. She doesn't know. She has no idea what the story is, what happened to her. But she wound up with a turtle inside of her. And surprisingly enough, a dead turtle in your vagina. That's painful.
Yeah. Yeah. She might have done it herself.
So I'm sorry we didn't get to Totally True or Totally Bullshit this week. I had some great questions, but we'll have to just save them for the next time. And appreciate you watching at home. Hope you have a great weekend. Thanks for watching the Friday Power Panel. Thanks to Steve and Dave for making it. We appreciate the love you guys send us in the comment section. You're great. Thanks to all the crew who did a great job today. Edwin, appreciate you helping us with the camera and all this stuff. Have a great weekend. We'll see you next time on Friday Postgame. And as always, stay strong.